Hello and welcome to the special episode of Bounty Hunt. Normally we do a weekly breakdown of the latest episodes of Star Wars television, brought to you by the Bettini Podcast Network, but this week we're breaking down the trailer for the newest live-action show set in the High Republic, Star Wars The Acolyte. I'm your host Jacob, joined by my good friends JG and Oz, but we're going to kind of jump right into it and get straight to the good stuff. Fellas, we have High Republic on screen. We've been waiting. This was announced all the way back in like December of 2020. How are we feeling?
It's great. You know, things are cheery, bright. You know, it's light in life. No one's going to die. It's going to be all great. You know, good times around here in the galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, we're going straight into clowning. Cool.
Full confession. When you said we were doing a special episode about the High Republic TV show, I prepped for Young Jedi Adventures. So yeah, that's what I thought we were talking
so
about.
So real of you. Yeah.
I'm so excited. I've watched the blurry celebration version of this trailer like 100 times. I don't support piracy, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do, right? And this was sick. And we've got a lot to talk about, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I resisted watching the actual blurry Celebration London footage. I did, however, it was me, I think Eric and Emma that I remember, just like we always would get up in the morning. I think JG was there for some of them. I don't know if you were there for this specific one, but we'd get up in the morning and just like refresh like live tweets and whatever like small live video footage and coverage that Star Wars would officially have of whatever was happening in the day to kind of like do news coverage and stuff like that. And I just remember, you know, oh, there's a High Republic panel getting little snippets here and there. And they're like, oh, they're showing the Acolyte trailer. Cool, cool. That's great for them. We're obviously not going to see it. And then just fuzzy, blurry, off to the side picture of Vernestra Rowe. And then just everyone in this Zoom call, just running around their apartments. I like went and found my copy of like High Republic number 6 with her variant cover. Like crazy time. And it's wild to, now that we're here, it's all come around. So. We got our first full trailer today, and some I guess just out of the way, some information about the show. 8 episodes, airing, I believe, June 4th, and a 9 p.m. Eastern airtime is confirmed. So very exciting for us American folks. Sorry, Europeans. I guess welcome to our world for most other Star Wars shows that are not Ahsoka and this. And it's a double episode premiere. We're getting 2 of the 6 episodes on the first week. Not sure if they'll stack others up later down the stretch.
6? I thought it was 8.
Yeah, 8 total. But yeah, 2. Cool. Yeah, sorry, I don't know if I misspoke. 2 at the first week. I'm not sure if they'll stack and do like a double somewhere else. But if you want to see more content for this, they are doing a Phantom Menace 25th anniversary screening in AMC theaters starting around May 4th. I think it's May 3rd is the technical first day of that. And at the end, there will be some bonus preview of Acolyte, just like they did for Andor and Rogue One the other year. So a lot of information out of the way. But fellas, let's talk about the trailer. Just like overall, do we want to hit like first impressions? How did watching the first 90 seconds or so of live action High Republic make you feel?
I think they nailed the tone. It felt very High Republic. Like, it felt very, like, there was, like, optimism and such, but yet there was always this underlying tone of dread of something, you know, something is out there in the shadows, in the dark, and lurking there to come for the Jedi. And so I think they just, ultimately, the tone throughout is what really stood out for me the most.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, seeing the gold robes and especially, like, array of lightsabers instantly brings you to the High Republic, and that's like some of the coolest things that feel the most different from what we know. And that's the thing here, is like, even Andor, which obviously has a different feel, it's still very Imperial, it's very Rebellion, it's very Star Wars. This is very Star Wars, but it's like, whoa, this ain't your mama's Star Wars, right? Like, it's something different that obviously the book nerds among us have been all about for 3 or 4 years now, and now seeing it on a much bigger stage is exciting.
Sure. Yeah, I hope you all have your first comics appearance of Vernestra Rowe ready. The Halloween reproduction of High Republic number 5, which is not actually her first comic appearance. It's fine.
Listen to the Cosmic Force.
impromptu ad. But I guess kind of like breaking down like some of the actual events of the trailer. We don't know a whole lot. The vibes are great. The visuals are great. But we start off with like what seems to be a Kreish lesson with some Jedi younglings with Master Soul, played by, I'm probably going to spell to pronounce his name wrong, Lee Jung-jae, the dude from Squid Games, and kind of walking through how they feel in the Force, and some younglings are calling out, "I see life, I see balance," and someone's like, "I see fire." You know, very sick Bell Zedifar reference, if I do say so myself. But yeah, it's, you know, hey, it's thrown back to Yoda teaching all the younglings in Phantom Menace, or not Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, you know what I meant.
He also teaches the younglings in the High Republic in a little book we just discussed called Jedi Brave in Every Way. I'm getting out of the gates on my Oz clownery. There's just something about, I think the reason that we enjoy returning to the prequel era, which we mind that well a lot as fans, is the idea of a bunch of Jedi is just, there's something captivating about that. So seeing the kids getting taught, it's just comfortable and exciting, even though obviously everything is all headed towards doom. Seeing kids, it's hopeful and bright, and we'll at least get to be happy for a little bit.
Right.
It doesn't always end up very well for younglings in Star Wars, Oz. We should know that by now.
Yeah, but this is still 100 years before the Phantom Menace, and they're all still, you know, there's still 10,000 Jedi when we get to the prequel, so these might be okay. I mean, everyone dies eventually, JG. So let's let them live for a while.
They will all, mostly depending on their species, be dead by the time that movie starts, so it's fine. But we move forward to some action. We get some, like, kind of interspersed, whatever the word I'm looking for, interspersed scenes of like some sea kind of underworld, some more low to the ground shots. But then we also get a fight between kind of who's being presented as one of our antagonists. I don't know if they're gonna be the main antagonist, May, played by Amanda Stenberg, as fighting, oh gosh, I wrote it down, what's her name, Indara, is played by Carrie Ann Moss. And I saw in a lot of the interviews, we're going to be kind of referencing some of these. There's like 4 or 5 main interviews that came out with Leslie Headland today, that a lot of the fighting style was inspired by samurais, as, you know, Star Wars tends to do.
Yeah. Which also, when I first saw that her name's Indara, my mind obviously went to Indira
Stokes.
Yep. Same.
I don't think there's any connection there, but it's just a fun little... sort of a call out that, hey, there's another High Republic Jedi. Is she alive? I know
she's very dead.
Okay, that's what I thought. I'm like,
this is the Rising Storm, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Rest in peace, Indira Stokes. Your name lives on.
Or wait, no. Sorry, I'm thinking of Tayami for some reason. No, Indira Stokes is alive.
Cool. Jacob got one wrong for once. All right. Well, maybe this is Indira's granddaughter. I know that Jedi don't have kids. Don't worry about it. Carrie Ann Moss, anyone who's roughly my age at mid-30s has been obsessed with her for, 25 years now since The Matrix came out? So seeing her as a Jedi is all sorts of wish fulfillment.
Mm.
I think she's the one most excited.
I was like, we can stop it there. No.
Leslie, you've been agreeing. Leslie did that. I don't
have any AO3 fic.
Okay. So we go from there. And I think we have some really cool quotes kind of in a narration in the background of, you know, someone's killing the Jedi. I don't know if this is we're going down Trail of Shadows, more comics reference for you guys. You know, are we having a bit of a mystery potentially? You know, who is killing the Jedi? What is killing the Jedi? Maybe. I don't think it's the Nameless this time again, but you never know. I guess like a tagline for the show was, I think it was, "In an age of light, darkness rises," which is very interesting. Again, transitioning from the High Republic, this golden age, even though when you're reading the books, it does not feel like a golden age, if we're being honest.
It did for a second.
Yeah, the first like half a chapter of Light of the Jedi was really sick. And then we go from there to, again, we're eventually arriving with the Phantom Menace. So, yeah, it's, you know, we are in a period of change in the galaxy, and it's something that, again, Leslie Headland has mentioned in her interviews of exploring that time difference. So, yeah, I don't know what you all kind of think about this certain time frame in the galaxy, which is about halfway between Light of the Jedi and the Phantom Menace.
There's a lot of potential here because it takes, you know, what we have come to know from the High Republic and also what we know from the prequels, and it's able to merge it into its own identity. And so it almost creates a whole new little mini sub era almost, where, you know, yes, there's a lot of familiar things, but she's able to do her own thing and really create a lot of new things here, taking, you know, mixing the two eras there.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, when the High Republic was first launched or even announced a few years ago, everyone was like, oh, that's interesting, because that's a timeline that even Legends never really touched on. Mm-hmm. At least as far as I understand it, I was not a huge Legends guy.
Yeah, I mean, like, literally the closest I think to Legends for this was like Darth Plagueis, which was, I don't know, like 30 something years before the Phantom Menace, give or take, I want to say.
It basically jumped from the Old Republic to the prequels.
Right, yeah.
And a big part of that is all from, you know, the like two lines, one from, I think, the Phantom Menace between Mace and Yoda about how they haven't seen a Sith in so long, and Obi-Wan saying the Jedi were peacekeepers for 1,000 years, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even when the galaxy is more or less at peace, there's still going to be, you know, bad people. They didn't just all go away. So I think there's a lot more to it. A lot of people are worried, like, oh, there can't be lightsaber fights and stuff because that breaks canon. It's fine.
We don't even know that. This is something I have
preached,
fought back against people for a while. I'm more open to it now, but they're like, everyone's like, it's a Sith and it's Darth Plagueis. Nowhere has that ever been said. It's a dark side user, is like, they've all, and all the like interviews and stuff leading up to this week, it's been like they're facing off against the dark side. If you read the High Republic, you know the Sith is not the only dark side thing out there. If it's a Sith, cool. It's gonna be sick as hell. I'm gonna have a good time with it. But don't like build up in your expectation that it's going to be one thing and then just get mad when it is not exactly what you wanted it to be.
Yeah, and also, like, if it is a Sith, that doesn't mean it's breaking canon necessarily. One, agreed. Let the show play out. Like, surprisingly enough, these people have watched the movies. I think mm-hmm. they're aware of what's going on and what that conversation was. If it's a Sith, there's going to be a reason why that line still works. Who cares? But to my original point is, like, this era is cool. We're even if it's not Darth Plagueis, we're obviously pointing towards the rise of Sidious and Palpatine. Yeah. I'm sure we'll talk about some theories and stuff here at the end, but Plagueis could be behind this. I just don't think this is anyone wanting a Darth Plagueis story.
This is not even if it is him involved in somehow, this is not his story specifically.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Not yet.
But hey, you know, we always have the Rise of Skywalker visual dictionary to mention his name. So, you know, that's, you keep holding on to that. Again, we have this tagline of "In an age of light, darkness rises," and then another quote from one of the characters was, I think, I'm pretty sure I directly got this, but this isn't about good or evil. This is about power and who is allowed to use it, which I think is a really, again, interesting thing to play with, especially coming off of the High Republic and the struggle of power and how different people utilize power, just like, you know, Marcion Roe versus the Jedi versus the Republic and all that.
Yeah, and I think that quote is said by Mother Anastasia, I think is how we're going to pronounce that, mm-hmm. Jodie Turner-Smith, which they describe her as a leader of a coven of witches, which is that I would assume is like kind of in the middle. So her saying that is such an interesting perspective, because I think it'd be safe to presume that she is neither, you know, Jedi or dark side per se. She is in that middle, just kind of similar to how the Night Sisters were.
Yeah. And they even, oh, go ahead, Oz.
It's a weird line for me, because it's like, is this a good, like a Jedi or a good person talking about taking power away from other people? Like, are we, is this a nuclear proliferation type thing, like taking nukes from other countries? Or is this a bad guy saying everyone should be allowed to have power? I don't know. There's a lot of ways this could go.
This feels like this character wrote a book and like 200 years later, DJ from The Last Jedi read it. It was like that, their spin. So
yeah, DJ, he has this on his bookshelf next to Nimick's manifesto.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, it's interesting. There's a lot of theories already about this character. Leslie Headland said in another interview that she was inspired a lot by Asajj Ventress and the Night Sisters, despite the fact that they are not actually using Night Sisters in this story. But the fact that, again, this is described as a coven leader of witches, very interesting. A lot of people are also pointing out visual similarities between this character and the mother from Phase 2 of the High Republic, with lots of blue garb and some wave-like patterns on their clothing, and she has a like white spiral like face paint on her forehead. So kind of giving, again, that cult-ish vibe, I guess, from all like the visual indications we're getting so far.
I mean, I wouldn't count on it, but who's that this is not a Path of an Open Hand offshoot or descendant or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's the exact same thing, but you know, at least we might get some inspiration from that. You know, maybe it's Path of the Half Opened Palm of the Fist.
I guess they have the Path of the Closed Fist now.
Well, that even diverged, so who knows?
Yeah,
they had a cult split. You know, it was bad. All the members split between the two churches.
Yeah, so yeah, you know the schism.
Right. Yes, I've heard. Yeah, Markion Rowe nailed his theses to the.
That's a different split, but yeah.
Yes, I know. I was just riffing. All right.
Fine. All right. So, after this whole thing with the maybe half open fist person, there's a red lightsaber. I don't know that I was expecting this. Who knows if this was in the Celebration trailer? I again did not watch it, but someone shows up with the red lightsaber, and they're immediately met with like 7 or 8 Jedi lightsabers, lots of greens, lots of yellows, one blue lightsaber. It's kind of surprised to see that one in the minority, given Star Wars' track record for live action. And looks like a big showdown's happening. It seemed like it was on a forest planet, which we saw earlier when they're talking about someone's killing the Jedi. It looks sick.
Some sort of fourth power too, where they like get caught off of the Jedi, get like caught off their feet for a moment there at the end.
It's like a shockwave of some sort.
Yeah, a little like a little bit of airbending, which is relevant at the moment.
Yeah, shout out Utini Avatar Show. So
I don't know if the red lightsaber, I don't remember if that was specifically in the Celebration footage. The gang shot was, although it was a different angle, so it was a slightly different look at the big group of them. I just kind of assumed there would be one, because it seemed to make sense with the title. And then the poster yesterday that was the lightsaber with the blood tracks was obviously meant to evoke a red lightsaber, so I guess I just expected that. It was cool to see it flying through the air, though. That's a visual we don't get to see a lot.
Yeah. So we kind of touched about it on a little earlier. Do we think this is a Sith or a dark side adept or a God forbid I say it, a gray Jedi? Evil.
He said
it. I usually am the one who says it.
I'm now, after like looking at a lot of these interviews today with Leslie and looking just watching the trailer, I'm now in the camp that this is going to be Sith centric. While I think some of the outside forces are not Sith related, I think they're going to be like sort of like red herrings, kind of, no pun intended there. I do think that this user is Sith, and I think. With that force power there at the end, I think they are teasing that this person is very powerful. The fact that this one individual could go up against however many Jedi there were.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. I think the Sith are involved for sure. One, because I think it makes sense. And two, like from a meta perspective, I feel like that's what they think people want to see, because I think people do want to see that. And I think, I'm not saying they have to give in to fan service, but I think there are times where you should follow people's expectations. But whether or not that one's a Sith, like this person we see throwing their lightsaber, I don't know. They could be like the Sith version of an Inquisitor, or like Asajj Ventress, or Maul, who I know was technically like one of the Rule of Two, depending on how you define it. He was being trained up, but he was always a pawn. I don't know. And I, at this point, I don't really care, but I do think that the Sith, and I think it probably is Darth Plagueis, is behind whatever's going on. The question is whether they show up on screen. Who knows?
I think it'd be very cool. Like, I like it being an Asajj style, like Sith assassin or something like that. I also like something that Legends did a few times, is like a non Bane Sith order that was like, and some of them even overlapped. Like there was like the one Sith, or like I guess Lumaya Sith, or the Darth Krayt. There's all these kind of like non Rule of Two Sith people that have occurred over time. It'd be interesting to see, maybe, you know, it's like an offshoot branch that exists in it for a brief amount of time. That'd be kind of interesting. I don't know. I'm sure it'd be
also
sick.
The question, and I think what there's already been a lot of discussion about, like I said, how to resolve the line from the Phantom Menace if this is a Sith. I think it could be a Sith, and our Jedi just never find out.
They'll
about
die.
It. Or they die. Justice for Kev Mo's Inc. But
I mean, that happens in like the Darth Maul comic, is like he finds a Jedi and he's like, I'm just gonna kill him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's, man, that comic bangs. But because when Qui-Gon, after he fights Maul in Phantom Menace, he comes to Mace, he's like, I'm pretty sure it's a Sith Lord. And Mace is like, no, that I don't think so. And we know that the Jedi are, I won't say stupid, but they get tunnel vision and
ignorant.
We've seen Yoda do this with the Nameless in the High Republic.
Yes.
Like, oh, it's not a problem anymore. Just, you know.
Yeah. And so I think that they could just be like, oh, these were just some guys with red lightsaber. Don't worry. Definitely not Sith. And then the camera like cuts and it's just Darth Plagueis cackling in his room. So I don't know.
You, not to get it too deep into like the theory weeds this early, but like going off of like, say it's a Sith, like, you know, assassin or Sith warrior, you know, like the final shot of this season could end with like, you know, the Jedi finding this assassin being killed, and it's then revealed to us that like maybe Plagueis or someone under Plagueis killed them. And so now they actually think that the Sith are gone, because they're like, oh, this one Sith warrior is gone. But in reality, it's like, no, they're still out there. You just think that they're not.
Like, yeah, I think that the first red blade we see could be a sacrificial lamb.
How sick would it be if, like, you know, we said, like, what if they kill them all? What if they kill everyone but one person, and that one person transitions over to the dark side? That'd be cool.
That would be cool. I mean, if we're talking about transitioning over to the dark side, if I'm remembering right, the one of the original premises that was released talked about our main character finding or like reuniting with a Padawan. And so there's kind of an obvious thought here that this dark side user, or the girl that Carrie Ann Moss is fighting, is the former Padawan. And so, you know, she's seemingly turned to the dark side. Maybe that's been confirmed. I'm not sure. I didn't actually read all the databank stuff.
Yeah, no, nothing like that. That's been like that explicit, I don't think.
But yeah, I could see, I think that we'll see at least her defect. There's also like, there's been theories that teacher scene is her as a young kid, kind of like we saw Reva in the flashback of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And then my question there on that is, would she be one of the lost 20? I mean, obviously, we don't know if she became a master first.
Yeah.
But we could see another one of the lost 20 here. That'd be kind of neat.
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, we are also, again, pushing up against Dooku Jedi Lost in the timeline. We're like not that far away from it.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah,
it would be putting
like 20 years away.
Three people
like
of the 20 within 100 years, because we assume a certain member of the High Republic comics is going to leave the Order.
Yeah. Also, at the time of Dooku, it's only 18 because it's him and Anakin make 20. Isn't that how it works?
I didn't know. No.
Or no. I can't remember.
Anakin's not one because he leaves. No.
Well.
And then there are no more
Jedi. He was no master. But yeah, whatever.
That and this, what's her face? Jocasta Nude talks about the 20, I think, before.
She talked about it in was supposed to talk about Attack of the Clones.
Whatever. Attack of the Clones deleted scene.
We're in the weeds.
We assume was the 20th. Yeah, we are in the weeds. You're right. All that to say, I think that we could see some people switching sides here.
For sure. Do you want to kind of hop into some of the other snippets we've got from interviews? Or is there anything else we want to hit specifically on the trailer right now?
One of the most refreshing things about the trailer that has already been getting talked about a lot is the amount of aliens we've seen. It seems that they're mostly going to be background characters, but we get at least one line from a near human. I don't know what she is supposed to be exactly. We've got the Wookiee and then a bunch of backgrounds. And then obviously Vern is a Murialan.
Yeah. Daphne Keene's character is like a half human, half Thielen.
Yeah.
That's going to be a main character.
That's the character I was talking about.
Yeah, some of the interviews she mentioned, there's going to be a Zygerian Jedi, I think. So definitely some good alien pulls. Hopefully that looks a little bit better. I mean, the ones we've seen so far, I think they look better than like the Duros and...
I thought Cad Bane looked fine, but...
He's all right.
The Powen...
Yeah, Powen was pretty rough.
Yeah, Grand Inquisitor... that's like the main reason I'm worried about Plagueis showing up is like, would they do the
what's a moon look like?
What's kind of moon?
All right. Well, we got some cool little snippets from there's interviews from StarWars.com, IGN, Collider, Hollywood Reporter. Some interesting things we pulled out of there was so Leslie Headland, I think, is very interesting as a creator. She's, I think, most known for The Russian Doll, which is a Netflix show I never watched, but I've heard good things about.
I've seen the first season and it's fantastic. I think the second season came out and I have not watched it yet, but
So she is someone that grew up with the special editions on VHS and Heir to the Empire, she mentioned specifically, and mentions how she got to bring in some like EU specific lore and be like, yeah, no one said that I couldn't, so they didn't stop me. We're gonna probably get some cool things in there. And then also she got a Macquarie Leia tattoo after she got this job, which I think is very sick.
That is sick. I mean, if you're going to get an artist tattoo, you might as well go with the goat.
For sure. Fair. I mean, it was either that or like Phil Noto. So, you know. kind of a repeated theme I saw from a lot of these interviews is her talking about like if Star Wars is a like thematic storytelling is about the underdog versus the institution, then in her story the Jedi is the institution, which I don't necessarily think is like the Jedi is the bad guy at all, but it's like, you know, they play a different role in the story than they might in other like Star Wars movies, for instance,
which I mean it's kind of the basis of the prequels.
Yeah.
In a way,
if the title of the show is called The Acolyte, I would then assume that we are going to focus in some capacity more than the trailers are leading on from the perspective of the Acolyte or whomever is on the other side of the Jedi. And so I can see that if we're looking at it from their perspective, then yeah, the Jedi are this institute that is opposing them.
Yeah. And like, again, this is on the sort of fall of the Order, this long path downwards towards where they are in the prequels. So... moving on, again, the IGN interview we already mentioned, there's some inspiration to take from the Asajj Ventress and the Night Sisters. They did not use the volume on this. They said a lot of on-site sets, which I think is very, very cool.
I think it was mostly, just slightly temporary, think it was mostly still filmed on a soundstage in London. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's not unusual. Most shows are filmed like that. But it did shoot some on location versus like Mando, which I don't think shoots on location except that one Boba Fett episode.
There's the Boba Fett episode, and then I remember from the behind the scenes stuff, the one with the Mudhorn that was also on location.
Yeah,
if it looks like a desert, it's in Southern California. Outside of that, it's on the volume.
It's within the 30-mile zone around around LA.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the volume is a really cool piece of technology, but I think it's also exciting that we're going to branch out and get some things that don't look like Southern California desert.
100%. If we're talking about locations, there, I know we said we're going to clown at the end, but there's one shot. I don't think it is, but a lot of people are saying it looks a little bit like Octo, because we got the, you know, the rocky shores, some greenery. JG, you seem to perk up. You think it is?
I think so. I think it's fitting for the story, for what they're going. I think if we're looking at any other story, like if there was like this came out for another show, I'd be like, nah, probably not. But I don't know. It feels like this fits. Like if we're telling the story of, you know, this Jedi versus the Sith or whomever, it feels like that something could draw them, especially if we're looking at also the character of the smuggler, Quimir, being the fact that he procures unusual things. Like, I feel like, you know, in a Jedi temple there, you know, the dots could connect.
They go there to find the prime Jedi, and then this is all just a stealth backdoor pilot for the Dawn of the Jedi movie.
That'd be so insane. Oh my god! I will take the contrarian view on this one. I don't think it's Octo, which I think is probably more likely viewpoint, a less fun viewpoint for sure. There is like someone pointed out on Twitter that there's like a shot kind of like a few beats before it in the trailer that's just like a island on an ocean that looks very similar vibes wise to that shot later that looks like Octo, and it has a city on it, so definitely not Octo. So that's probably the most likely.
We don't know what Octo looked like 300 years before the last Jedi.
Hey, it was bustling with all of those little hermits there. But yeah, I would guess probably not Octo, but it would be really cool.
It'd be unexpected for sure. And I, in fact, other than Coruscant, I don't think we'll go to any of the big hitters.
Not even Tatooine.
I mean, they've got, you know, they've got the digital set built for that, so maybe we'll get Tatooine, but
we get young Jabba.
We'll go to somewhere we've been.
Jabba's
before,
around
somewhere we know.
What's that, JG?
I think we'll go somewhere that we've been before, because I think most of the planet, because even looking in the trailers, like most of the planets are like unrecognizable except for obviously Coruscant. But I do think there will be at least a location, because they, besides like the Jedi and like the lightsabers, there's not a lot that's connecting people to like the already pre-existing established like Star Wars. So you throw in a planet that kind of, you know, makes people a little more comfortable. They're like, oh, I've been here before. I got this. See it in a different era.
Just like how the prequel trilogy had Tatooine.
We're going to spend the first episode at Coruscant and that'll be it.
I don't think we'll be there a lot. I mean, it'd be cool if they just did some name dropping places like Dalna or Jedha's a possibility.
Jedha's possible. I would say, I mean, I would love to see Ilum. I don't know if it fits in the story they're telling, but that'd be sick.
That would be, but I'd
throw in a High Republic planet for fun.
That's what I'm saying. Go to
Valo or
Planet X.
Yeah, or Irem or
Irem. Yeah,
Arano, Elfrona. I don't know. Pick up High Republic planet. I don't care which one it is.
Because then most of the viewers are going to even know what that is. Like, it's going to be like the 2% of us that have read the books.
Yeah, we're going to be Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the screen.
It's like how in Outlaws they're going to Akiva, and I think like 7 people got really stoked.
Right. Aftermath trilogy.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Anyway, yeah, I think Coruscant is basically a given. I don't know if it's been confirmed that that's Coruscant, but beyond that, I don't expect much in the way of familiarity.
Mm-hmm. But on the point of familiarity, something that they mentioned also in these interviews is that they're borrowing a lot from High Republic art style in terms of like costuming, which I think is like kind of obvious if you've watched the trailer. It's not, some of the robes look more familiar than others. Some of them are kind of a very bright yellowish gold. But we are definitely seeing some influence from the design of the books and the comics, which is very exciting.
Yeah, like I said, seeing gold robes, which is like my favorite part of the High Republic style, is just really cool to see, because in the prequel trilogy, they all wear Obi-Wan's desert robes, and that's basically it. Like, let's be fashion variety. And then back to Mother Anissa or whatever her name is, she looks sick.
Yes.
I know. I don't. She's not, unless you draw a connection between the path. I know she's not necessarily High Republic inspired, but this is just fashion wise going to be a really cool series.
The cosplay is going to be so sick for the next celebration.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man.
Shout out 501st and Rebel Legion homies, which I'm sure are scrambling to make the newest updated costuming guide. Good luck with that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, definitely makes me glad I'm not a
y'all cosplayer. Are something else. Respectfully.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, we got that. Moving on to some of the bits from the Collider interview. I thought this one was very interesting because there's like it's like framed around a large blog quote, which is like enough that you think there's context, but then it's like, I don't know, because like it straight up's like, oh yeah, we're going to have, it's like, you know, we're saving some things for season two. And then I see some people being like, you know, it felt more like a, I'd be happy to do this if we get a season two. I don't know how to feel about this. I'm going to say maybe. The quote seems kind of definitive, but I also understand the caution.
I'm always cautiously optimistic because like things can just change on a dime now in the industry so quickly. But definitely the wording makes it out like, no, we saved things. We held on to things. While this is going to tell a complete story from point A to point B, there are still room for more stories to be told, furthering the collective story here. Like, it is very definitive. And it was from Leslie herself, too. Like, this is not just like some random schmojo.
And they said they're saving more book characters potentially for season two, which I think we can save some predictions for the end. But yeah. They also, in this quote, mentioned that they're like, I love Vernestra's character. She's sassy. She's like a very like learned Jedi, even as a young kid. And they mentioned the light whip. So I'm going to say it's at least pretty possible that we see her use it. They're at least aware that she has one, which is, and again, W.
They better. I know that it would probably make some awful, awful discourse, but then again, what doesn't? But
let it be cool.
Yeah, it would be so sick. Like, yeah, I know people clown on the Rebels Inquisitor Sabers, and they're goofy for sure, but seeing Reva spin that was awesome. I know that she didn't fly, and that's probably for the better, but she did a little jump with it. Like, just have her use it once, and I'd be good. As for seasons, I mean, Andor started out as a it started out as a 5-season show, but they, I think, had, by the time they were making it, were guaranteed 2 seasons. So it'd be cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Every deal is different, so maybe they don't have a guarantee. But she says she pitched it as a multi-season show, so hopefully, hopefully that's what we get.
And all the kudos that if they do the light whip and they pull it off, like all the kudos to the visual effects. I can't even imagine, like, animating lightsabers is to make it look really good is hard enough, but to make a light whip, like, that's going to be wild to see if they execute that really well.
And if someone dares say light whips are dumb, I will remind you that they existed in the 1970s comics of Star Wars, and no one was complaining back then, so get over it.
Yeah, no one has ever called the 77 run dumb.
Well, yeah, Lumaya, you know, hey, she made it back into canon with the books later on. It's fine.
Jackson, we got...
Yeah. Okay, we're not going on that far of a tangent. I do think... I'm just remembering the, like, days of the internet when, like, the first fan... Not Phantom Menace, Force Awakens trailer came out, and you had all the edits of like Kylo Ren with the lightsaber on Starkiller Base, but like he shoves it out and it's a lightsaber like Swiss Army knife.
Dude,
good times.
That, man, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's the thing, is like, how many times have we seen new lightsabers in live action? I guess twice, really. Is Kylo's
the cross guard and the double.
And granted, I think in 99 or whenever that trailer came out, everyone's reaction was like, holy shit, that's sick.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anyone was clowning on it. Maybe the boomers at the time who were, you know, like 40, maybe they were.
There's some forum somewhere that I'm sure was awful.
Yeah, like, that's not how lightsabers work. And then, yeah, for Kylo, it definitely got made fun of. And now, even the people who don't like the sequels, they're like, well, yeah, but Kylo is cool. Like,
yeah, they, yes.
And his lightsaber is cool. So, yeah, people would get over it. I always fear for discourse because it's 2024 and discourse drives
it. Yeah, it runs our life, yes. Unfortunately. So, but hey, let's move on to a fun, happy quote. Also came from this interview. I hope High Republic fans are excited by the white robes because we really were intent on using them, not only because it was a nod to the books, but also because I think it really thematically explains a lot. They're not getting into a bunch of skirmishes, you know. They're wearing all white because not much is happening. Connecting those with the brown robes that you usually see Jedi in as the mission robe, the robes that would get dirty, those are fun things to pull. So again, yeah, we're kind of exploring the differences in the Jedi back then where, I mean, they're still like in outposts and stuff like that. They're not like secluded to Coruscant, but the galaxy is at peace. They're kind of, you know, they are peacekeepers. They're not getting down and dirty as much, so they can have these elegant, white, fancy robes that you can't take out anywhere. Maybe if you're on, you know, Mimbin, you can't have white robes, but, you know.
Yeah, I think what I like about this quote and several of her quotes, anytime she mentions the books, it's great, not just because, like, she's nodding to the fans, but, like, I think that it shows she's working really closely with Lucasfilm, obviously, but and the rest of the story group and all them, because I don't get the sense that this started as a High Republic show specifically, just the way the timeline works. I don't think that's possible. I think it's more like how Rogue One had Saw Gerrera. I don't think they've ever confirmed this. I don't think that part was written as Saw, and then they were just like, hey, this could be this character from the Clone Wars, and whoever, I don't know if that was Tony Gilroy or whoever else, was just like, yeah, sure, that works. I get the feeling that's what Leslie Headland's do. It's like there's a lot of back and forth where she's like, oh, cool, this thing exists, let's lean into that. And right. And that's great to see, because the books have evolved a lot, even in just the 3 years they've been going. And obviously she's in tune with that. I don't think this is a sequel to the books, but she's moving things around so it still works. Yeah. And obviously the story comes first, but that's comforting to see.
Yeah.
And Charles Soule was specifically consulting on this too, I believe, as well, correct?
Yeah, he's been, well, I don't know that it's been confirmed technically that he was on this one, but he has like he has a fancy title now. It looks so much like senior story consultant for like television.
I thought that's why I'm tweeting some stuff out today about it. Yeah, well, I could be wrong.
There's no definition for his role at Lucasfilm that I've ever seen or that he's ever said. Like, he doesn't really say what he does beyond the books he's written.
I mean, he did talk about this new job that he got like a year or two ago on a newsletter at some point, but yeah.
Anyway, he at least talked, I'm sure, with Leslie about it, because it seems that she talked to the book writers.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think Justina Ireland mentioned like they didn't know ahead of time that Vern was going to be in the show, or that was something that was brought to them. So like, yeah, there's a back and forth. Speaking of Charles Soule, it was funny, another light topic. Jacob, you shared this tweet that someone was like, Charles, thanks for all that.
Oh, I think Eric shared this.
Added to this era.
Or no, it's like, you know, I know you helped or something like that.
And he's like, in a nice way, he was like, dude, I built this shit.
Like, basically.
Which, again, it's just crazy to see it go from books to this.
Yeah. It's wild. Any other kind of thoughts on so far what we've talked about?
No, I mean, the interviews, I still haven't read them all, but it's great how much content came out today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're, what, 2 months out? No, a month and a half out. No, I can't do math.
We're like 3 months out from show.
And we're starting the media blitz, it seems. Or maybe today was just the one day and then we won't talk about it for 2 months. But
mark your calendars for May 4th. Let's be real.
Right. Yeah, we all thought this was going to happen in 3 weeks here. God, I can't count, 6 weeks on May 4th.
Mm-hmm.
But we get it today. And so hopefully they keep, you know, feeding us for the next few months. I'm excited.
All right. Well, we are brought to you this week by Bounty Hunt ourselves. No one, you know, there are no rules here. And until I'm told otherwise, I'm going to say this week we're brought to you by Bounty Hunt. I'm sure some of you here are listening just because it's the Acolyte or just because it's the High Republic, and we love that. We hope you'll be here when we start our coverage of the Acolyte in June. However, in the meantime, we're still covering the Bad Batch on a weekly basis, so if you want to stay up to date with our thoughts on that, you can join myself, Oz, and JG every Wednesday to Thursday-ish, depending on when it comes out. And we'll be talking about The Bad Batch in long detail. And we're also usually joined by a special guest from our Youtini fellow friends. So, you know, if you like The Bad Batch, if you like what we've been talking about for the past, like, 45 minutes and just, like, hearing us talk, I check out Bounty Hunt. It's this podcast. Just, you know, you don't even have to go far. Open your app and subscribe to it right now. Maybe leave us a review. We appreciate it. But yeah, check out all of our conversations of The Bad Batch. And again, we'll be gone for a little bit after that show ends, but we will be right back in your feed as soon as The Acolyte kicks back off. So can't wait to talk more about Star Wars television with you all. Check out The Acolyte on your favorite podcast platform today. All right. JG, I think I cut you off. You're about to say something as we went into our break.
Yes, I was going to bring up, because it actually really isn't getting talked about enough on the internet, so I have to plug it here. The music of this trailer was fantastic. Composer Michael Abels, who also did Jordan Peele's Get Out and Us, I got to plug horror when I can. You know, we don't get a lot of it in Star Wars, but the music in this is really giving me the Us vibes, and I'm so here for it.
Yeah, I knew you'd have to do that. I haven't mentioned this yet, but how I watched this trailer, because the trailer came out at 11, and I have a class that starts at 10:55. So I would was in class. It started late. Like I might take a bathroom break and watch it in the bathroom. But no, I was like, whatever. It dropped. I watched it on mute with the subtitles. I did not get to watch it with sound. For another, let's see, let me do some math. Like 2 to 3.5 hours. I can't remember exactly. So it was a interesting way to experience this trailer for the first time. But yeah, once I finally did get to listen to it with sound many hours later, and I only had one earbud because my other one doesn't work anymore, it was great. And then finally I listened to it in stereo another 2 or 3 hours later. But yeah, the music bangs. Sound design seems like it's really sick. I'm excited to see more of this.
I'm glad that you held off from watching the blurry version for an entire year.
Just watch it on mute.
Yeah, just so you can watch it the way God intended on your cell phone in class on mute.
It's on my laptop. Chill.
Okay. I was about to say, David Lynch is coming for you. I don't even know if I quoted the right.
Christopher word. Nolan.
Yeah, all those guys.
My ass.
Yeah, however you watched it, guys, it's a sick trailer. You're going to watch it a lot over the next few months, so don't worry if you did it the wrong way the first time. Now, when the show comes out, watch it on a TV.
Oh, yeah, dude, my morning, like, star or morning or evening, depending on the show, Star Wars routine is wild. Like, I turn on my TV, I close all of my blinds, I turn off the AC because it gets loud as shit. When it
light
kicks on, I have speakers behind me that I kick on. Yeah, get some coffee. I go to my Roku instead of the built-in Disney Plus app because the built-in Disney Plus app only does 1080, even though it's a 4K TV. It's dumb. Yeah, I have a ritual that I participate in, and I will do that when Acolyte drops at 9 p.m. on June 4th.
Yeah, I think Acolyte's going to be one to do that for. Look, I like The Mandalorian, and I liked Obi-Wan Kenobi well enough, and Ahsoka, and all that. I realized that sounded really catty the way I phrased
that. Oz does not love those shows. He will do it for Young Jedi Adventures, but he will not do it for those
shows. No, I like those shows, but they are not... this feels like it's going to be more cinematic, akin to Andor. Again, we were talking earlier about the volume and the effects. This seems like, at least fingers crossed, it's going to be one that's a really great viewing experience, whereas Mando and Ahsoka, I really liked for the story. Visually, I wouldn't mind if I didn't have the best viewing environment. That, again, I'm not trying to be mean to those shows. I like them. I'm going to stop talking before
the disrespect
they come off as more like event-based almost, you know?
Yeah, and this, I think, is we're going to really want to digest.
This is cinema.
Yeah. Yeah, we come here.
We come here.
JD and I both made the Kidman run.
To my couch.
Yeah. Heartbreak is going to feel good in this show. If it's anything like the High Republic books, buckle up. That's another thing is a lot of people, I will even say most people who watch this will have not read a High Republic book.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And I think that's why it's the good thing that this isn't like a sequel to the books. So they're coming in blind, whereas we are coming in with a probably unhealthy level of hype.
Yeah. We're gonna you know, be silly for a minute. I want to get your guys' feedback. I made a Burnestra only speedrun reading order for the High Republic, and I want to hear your thoughts. It is a test of courage.
Courage.
Out of the Shadows.
Sure.
Mission to Disaster. That's her other book.
There is the short story from High Republic Adventures Annual.
I decided to that was like
I would actually go
points.
First. It's a lesson with Stellan Geos. It's worth three.
I told people those bonus points because I don't know if you want to buy a paperback for like half a comic book.
Anyway, keep going.
So those three books. Skip all of Phase Two. I understand that I like these stories, but if you are speedrunning, this is what you're going to have to do.
Yep.
Tales of Light and Life, only her story, which is like, I can't remember. It was not...
pages.
Yeah. And then Defy the Storm.
That's what we've done so far.
Yeah. And that was like, I'm like, that's probably legitimately all you can really fit in. And there are some other cool stories along the way, but... Her Marvel Comics issue or appearance is not worthy enough to get.
She's in like 10 total panels.
Right.
As a background character. I think
that's manageable.
Yeah. I also think anyone who hasn't read The High Republic, if you're listening to this, you're a dedicated enough fan. You probably have. But if not, Light of the Jedi is not only the first book, but it's also the one that best establishes the tone because it kicks off by kind of like showing you this is a different Star Wars than you've read before. So right. I think even if you're doing the any percent Vernestra speedrun, it's worth reading Light of the Jedi. One, because it's the thing that kicks off everything. And it's just a great book. Like it's killer. And it probably won't tie in at all with the shows. And I reckon you'll be fine with Vernestra's character having not read the books. But if you're looking for that experience, that's not a bad way to do it. And it's definitely manageable. It's like YA junior books.
You can do that in like a week, really, if you're dedicated. Maybe two.
Defy the Storm is taking me so long to read.
Yeah.
That's not going to start that one yet.
If you want like an even like faster, like just like give me like an evening... read Chronicles of the Jedi. It is not all about Vernestra Rowe, but it is like the Cliff Notes of the first two phases of the High Republic.
Yeah,
good pull.
And it's a banger. And lots of pictures, so, you know, that helps. I guess
we're like deep in the weeds.
Uh-huh.
Do we want to, I don't know how much left there is of the trailer to talk about, so do we want to make some predictions?
I think first I want to definitely hit, we've kind of talked about most of them, but like, make sure we hit the characters that we have not mentioned yet from the
data bank. There are more. Right.
So we already talked about May, which is Amanda Stenberg's character, and Sol, that's Lee Jung Jae character. Briefly mentioned Kimir, Q-U-I-M-I-R, which is Manny Jacinto's character.
I did not realize that was him in the trailer.
It's the dude from
The Good Place. Bortles.
He's described as a former smuggler who now makes his life as a trader, procuring unusual things and enjoying a life of leisure. We have Jeki, who's played by Daphne Keene, who is that half Thielen, half human. She was a Padawan apprentice to Master Sol. We also have Yord, played by Charlie Barnett, who is a Jedi Knight and guardian from the Jedi Temple, is an overachiever and rule follower. His need to be a by-the-book Jedi can cloud his mind. So, sounds like prequels Jedi.
Very Mace Windu here, kind of.
I mean, we have a long description of Vernestra Rowe, played by Rebecca Henderson. Kind of just follows very briefly her background from the books. It does mention her light whip. It mentions Imri Kantaros. This is also the Star Wars databank and not like the Acolyte databank, so I don't know if this really tells us anything about who she is in the show.
Well, I feel like this information was probably already on the High Republic section of the website.
Right, and they just placed a picture or whatever. Then we have, Mother Anicia, played by Jodie Turner-Smith, who is the leader of the Coven of Witches. Kel Naka is our Wookiee Jedi, played again by Jonas Tsutomu. He's a loner who lives a solitary life. as far as we know, not Bur Yaga, but hey, let's clown.
No, stop.
And then the last character is Master Indara, played by Carrion Moss, who's a Jedi Master of great physical and mental skill. These descriptions are like two sentences and the most vague things I've ever seen in my life, but hey, you have names. There you go. Okay, I guess the only other thing that's just me reading off a list, we have writers and directors for all the episodes, apparently. The first two episodes are written by Leslie Headland. The third episode is... I'm not reading this. I'm sorry. I'm just going to give you some directors. Leslie Headland, Kaganoda, Alex Garcia Lopez, Hanel Culpepper.
Those are your
three directors four directors for the series. And then your writer's room is Leslie Headland, Jason, explain this image, Jason McKellef, and Charmaine DeGreat. I'm pronouncing all these names wrong. Jasmine Flournoy and Eileen Shim, Claire Kuechel and Cora Adana, Cameron Squires, Jocelyn Bio, and Jen Richards. I think that's all of them. This was a very... Hey, there's some names.
We do a lot of prep work for these
episodes. Yeah, I pasted an image and then realized it would suck to read it all.
Is that really the most full writer's room that we've seen so far for the Star Wars show?
Yes. Actually, that's something that they also addressed, was they are very excited to have a full writer's room, a diverse writer's room, and they also had someone in the writer's room that was not a Star Wars fan, so they could be like, hey, yo, let's calm down. This story is not making sense for someone that is not, like, immersed in this world. How do we kind of make it, just give out a balanced perspective.
That would be such a fun job to have, to, like, get to go work in, like, a Star Trek writer's room, be like, I hate Star Trek.
It was not that I hate Star Trek or Star Wars. Yeah. It's just that I'm not the diehard fan.
Don't break my fantasy here. Just to be the devil's advocate, though, amongst a group of writers, that'd be cool. I mean, I don't know if this is at all related to the writer's strike, but that was a big sticking point in the strike, was the size of the writer's room. Mm-hmm. Most of our other shows, I think, have been written by a single writer. Or, like, I know Favreau, I think, wrote pretty much all of Mando, except when Dave steps in and co-writes an episode.
Yeah,
that may be the case for the rest. I don't have the facts in front of me, but you're definitely right, JG. This is the most diverse group, or at least in terms of size, of writers we've had.
Yeah. All right, time to clown our predictions. I think the first thing I want to kick off with toys, because this has been something that's been very lacking in the High Republic, unless you're like buying Young Jedi Adventure stuff. But no Funkos, no Hasbro figures. Only one lightsaber that was a limited edition, limited to like 7,500 pieces, and it was like $300-something.
Which Jacob owns.
Which I do own. It's behind
me. I also own.
Again.
Okay, I guess I got to buy it.
Yeah. Very lacking on a merch standpoint. This is the first time that, hey, we're definitely probably getting some Hasbro figures. We're definitely probably getting some Funko. Like,
I would be careful with that word, definitely. We still have very little from Andor. I'm not a toy collector.
We did get some from Andor, though. Like, we got Hasbro figures for most of it. We got, like, only four Funkos, which is not great. But every other show has gotten them.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't really collect the toys, but I'm just going to be excited to see High Republic stuff out in the wild. Like, that's pretty cool. And hopefully it happens. Like, you know, I'm rooting for you guys.
I'm hoping we get like the Mando Mondays or whatever. Not even though the Mando Mondays always suck. Like, to be completely transparent, it's like a lot of stuff you've already seen released and it's sold out already. And then like lots of like copy paste logos on apparel. But you know, there's usually like over the course of 8 weeks, like four really sick things, and I hope we get that for this show.
I hope there's not, for my wallet, it's hoping that there's not a lot of stuff, because of the fact that we do have so little High Republic merch, is that if there is High Republic merch, it's going to be bought.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, if they do a full wave of Black Series figures for this show, that's like a couple $100 or something like that. It sucks.
And JG's not joking. He cannot stop himself.
Nope. Not when it comes to High Republic.
It'll be on his shelf right next to his Japanese editions of Into the Dark and Out of the Shadows, which he cannot read.
Nope. Hey, he doesn't have a printed fan copy of Val the Silver Dawn yet, so...
Yeah, you know. Not yet. Not yet, but he and I are both...
Someday.
We'll get to it.
Someday. Yeah, we'll do it. DM me when you're about to purchase it, you know.
I mean, my biggest hope from, like, that side of things is that it's really successful, that it brings in High Republic fans, and that just means that they keep doing books and comics in the High Republic.
Yeah.
Because phase three will be ending in about a year, which it's crazy that this is happening before the books are done. Mm-hmm. But we don't know what that ending will mean for the era, if they come back and do a fourth phase, or if they just go and write, you know, here's what Vern was up to in the year between phase one and three, or whatever. I want to see more of that because we love these characters. We would like a volume two of the art book. In fact, an art book for the Acolyte's going to be sick. I hadn't even thought about that. There's a lot of potential there. So if you're listening to this, you're already going to watch it, but watch it again. Mm-hmm. Like, watch it two or three times. Go buy some merch.
God, yeah.
I guess I should buy some merch if I don't want to be a hypocrite.
An art book would be great. Also, like a tie-in comic miniseries or like novel. I'm not hopeful on those since they have not done them really with any of the new TV shows right now.
They haven't done it for a single one of them.
Yeah. Hey, they almost did one.
They briefly announced one. But
if we could get some tie-in media, that'd be amazing. You know, give us Sony can press some 4K steelbooks now that they have that deal going on.
Yeah, now this that's one gorgeous. I haven't bought any of the other steelbooks. I will probably buy Andor. Mm-hmm. This one would probably be a buy for me. I mean, obviously, if it's good, if 4 months from now, it sucks.
Don't say it.
Yeah, it's not going to suck. It's going to be awesome.
I'll just be booted from the call as we speak.
I'm very optimistic about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Fingers crossed for toys, though.
Yeah, for sure. Merch would be great. And then also, again, in one of the interviews, she mentioned potentially bringing in other book characters. What are other realistic book characters that we would like to see or maybe think could show up in the future?
Okay, before we talk about realistic,
okay,
let's list who we know
is alive. Or could be alive.
Obviously, Yoda.
Yoda, Yariel Poof, Operansisis. Yep.
Yariel, Operansisis. I think those are all, and Yaddle. We know
Kirak and Fila.
Kirak and Fila, because we see him in the comics and Charles Soule's Vader Run. Good pull. We know Jabba. We know Maz Kanata is alive. Mm-hmm. And we haven't actually seen Jabba in the High Republic. We've seen the Hutts.
Yeah.
We have seen Maz plenty lately. So I don't expect her to show up, but we know she's out there.
Burianga, from a lifespan perspective, makes sense. Yes. But obviously, he could get killed in the remaining books.
We've got Burian, Arkoff, two other Wookiee Jedi.
We don't know how old Arkoff is, so let's just
but it's possible because he was in phase two. So
yeah,
I don't think your earlier fake prediction of Junus's character actually being Burry in disguise is likely.
I don't think it's likely.
I don't think so.
Now I could see Burry I could see him being really hit by like everyone he knows dying and going to live off alone. I could see that being a character arc for him.
Him being like taking the Aslan route at the end of the manga precedent.
Yeah, I was more thinking like taking the Luke Skywalker route.
Oh, okay,
like,
that's right.
Going off to be a hermit, not like going insane. But I don't think that they'll put two Wookiee Jedi on screen.
That's fair.
I think that would be unlikely. Now we're getting into clownery. We've got Master Laru is a big dinosaur guy.
Yeah, who knows how long they live.
We have no idea about that species, but they seem like they could live a long time.
Yeah, if they're just larger than humans, it's probably a good bet that they live longer than them as well for some reason. Trying to think. Who else?
CG, you mentioned before the call.
Nubs.
Nubs, yeah. We don't know anything about his species. What are they called, Jacob?
Pubian.
Pubian, that's right. He is a Pubian.
Definitely not Shibuya Hawk.
Yeah.
Man, that would have been one of the most insane cameos if that actually like happened. Can you?
It's just like this blue guy going like...
You see him like walking in the background, just like stuffing his face full of food, because that's what he does in every episode.
But he's just freaking huge. He's like 8 feet tall, because we don't know if they get big.
And like gray.
Adult. Oh, he's not blue anymore. Oh, man.
He just got like, he's got touch of gray, you know?
Yeah. No, that's
wise nubs.
I don't see that happening. I think.
Do pantorns live longer? Could Lys be there?
Oh.
Ooh.
Lys Soleil.
Because she's pretty young.
Yeah, she's like, what, 10 maybe?
Yeah. So,
we don't know if they... That's a good question.
I mean, let's just probably book it that they do for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, all right. So, Lys Soleil will be around.
Is Bree the Jedi Brave kid? The Togruta?
She's human. You're right. The Toko is the Togruta. Togrutas do live to be pretty old, I think.
Yeah.
Very unlikely, but Charles Soule, that is a Charles Soule creation, and if he worked on this, he's like, hey, I got a little blue Togruta for you. from a book my daughter liked.
Master Hu Yang, he could be there. It's not really High Republic, but
oh yeah,
Hu Yang absolutely could be.
I think it's actually possible.
Now
like,
that
like joking
is unlikely, but would not be difficult to do because they've got all the assets from
Ahsoka.
I don't know if any of him was practical or if it was all CGI, but either way it would be trivial to do.
Yeah. Have him record a couple extra lines when he was doing Ahsoka.
Yeah, exactly. Or call him on the phone and have him do it. Like, David Tennant can record anywhere.
Yeah. We could get the one that Twitter would love to see the most based on the poster was Geode.
Geode. Yes. I saw a tweet that said, when the poster came out, it said, the background is a rock. Do you know who else is a rock?
Yeah.
Which is such a funny way to phrase that. It would be fun for the memes. Leslie, I know you're not listening to this, but please don't bring Geode into the show that you've already got. It's a funny gag in the books. It would not work.
We go translate as well.
Unless it's just like in the background somewhere and you just, there's a rock. And
it's like a very, very rectangular rock, and you're like,
and like there's like three female characters chatting it up
and like in the club,
yeah, in the cantina scene that we see.
I don't know like who else is really. I think we hit all the,
I think
there's only like two or three that are actually likely if we're being honest, but Oz, you are muted.
You muted yourself.
My bad. I was just so excited about this, I clicked the mute button. What if there's a stasis chamber somewhere and we see Dagon
Gera?
Yeah.
Oh. We're going to Kobo?
Yeah, they're on Kobo. No.
Someone on Twitter thought that one of the planets was Kobo based off architecture.
I mean,
I don't
think so, but no. I saw that come up.
I mean, while we're on the Jedi Survivor train, how about we see some Zepho?
Maybe.
No, maybe. outside of the council, like basically outside of characters that we already know from the movies, I think it's very unlikely. And that's one, just like a timeline thing because it's 100 years. And just like this is telling its own story. Yeah, they pulled in Vern, and that's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
But please, no one expect anything beyond that. And in fact, I don't even think we'll see Yoda. Outside of maybe a cameo,
but
like
yeah.
I could see a council scene where they go off, where they're being sent off.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier today about the whole reconciling the Sith thing. And one thought for how it could end, one would, Jacob, like you said, could be very depressing that everyone dies. And I think that's a strong possibility. Another, I think, could be just that like Soule comes and presents what happened to the council. And they're just like, that's not a Sith. It was just some guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Yoda's sitting there thinking and says some words of wisdom. But we all know, like, that was a Sith.
In his typical gaslight gatekeep girl boss mode. Yes. So,
Which would inevitably mean seeing Yariel Poof on screen again, which would just be amazing.
Yes.
I think it would be very cool in a more realistic sense to see a holocron of a High Republic era Jedi that we know. Because that's something that's done in the comics later on in Rise of Kylo Ren. We see a holocron of Eivor hundreds of years later. You know,
that was even before the High Republic started.
That's correct. And that was in like January or like, yeah, January 2020, I think was when that came out.
Yeah.
So that's a way you could potentially, cause like, be for real, there's no way that the story of Eivor and Elzar and Stellan is making its way into this TV show. I'm sorry. It is not, like, that's not happening. But maybe there's a way you could reference these characters like a holocron.
Yeah. I mean, I think my very tepid and keeping myself realistic prediction is that someone at some point will mention Starlight Beacon in conversation.
Yeah.
Or the Nile, and that's it. And that's enough, I think. Like, that's in Jedi Survivor, Cal Kestis refers to Ninth Sister as Missana Tide, which is a reference to her actual name from the comics, and that was like enough of tying it in for me that I'm like, all right, everyone has acknowledged that this is connected, and that's good enough for me. Like, keep it simple.
I very well could see a Marshawn name drop, like, in the same vein. Like, I think that is very, very possible, very likely. And even that enough would be just so satisfying.
JG, you want to see a full-on Marshawn cameo, be honest.
I plead the fifth. I'm just saying.
Yeah. But, hey, any other final predictions on this before we wrap it up?
No, other than I think this is going to be a good one. I don't think it'll be, like, Andor, which, you know, people slept on it first and then word spread that it was like, oh shit, you got to watch Andor. But I do think that people are going to come in, well, they're, like I said earlier, they're going to come in from two angles. There's those of us who've been reading who are coming in way too hot, and then people who are like, oh, another Star Wars show, I'll check it out later. And I think they're going to get convinced, because I think it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm. My one final, like, just clown theory, as a result of all of this today to end it all off, is that I do think that this will end up being a multi-season show, and I think that the Acolyte is going to be whoever is the antagonist in this episode or series season is going to be a red herring. It's basically going to, this whole show, multi-season, whatever it is, three seasons, will be telling the rise of the Acolyte of Sidious and Palpatine, and that by the end we will see, like, bridge the gap right up to the Phantom Menace, like, just based off of,
you mean the everything. Rise of the, so you think he's the
like, I think the ending,
he was the Phantom Menace.
Yes, like, the ending, like, season episode will be, like, revealing, like, the Acolyte this whole time has always been, like, Palpatine and Sidious, and that it, that will be the rise of him, essentially.
JG in his Gossip Girl era.
Yeah, worse. I think that, just timeline-wise, now, obviously, they can retcon the timelines book. I think that we know when Palpatine was born, and it wasn't yet. I think that was around, like, 86 BBY.
Time jumps happen.
Yeah, that, I mean, that could happen. I do think, though, I think you're on the right path. I think that this is going to be a plague. I think Plagueis will get a mention. I saw a great theory on Reddit that the final episode's just going to end with a shot of Plagueis going to bed, and that's the end of the show, because in the Legends book, he gets killed in his sleep. Or I guess that's even what Palpatine says in the speech. So I don't know if we'll see Plagueis, but I think that's what's going to be behind this. If it's only one season, I don't think that'll happen. I
agree. That's fair.
I don't think we'll get Plagueis season one, but I don't know. There's so much potential. We could clown. We were originally going to talk for 15 minutes, and
we're over an hour at this point.
We're nearing an hour and a half. We will be back in a couple months every week talking about this show. We might have to do an episode zero just to clown around a little more.
I think we should. That's trailer.
Yeah, we've got a long 3 months ahead of us waiting, but we've still got the Bad Batch. You know, tomorrow a new Bad Batch episode comes out, and I'm loving that. So let's focus on that. And in the back of my mind, I will just be zooming until June 4th.
Well said.
For sure. Well, one final reminder, this show is brought to you by ourselves, brought to you by Bounty Hunt. Subscribe to this podcast, not only for our Acolyte coverage, coming in June, maybe a little bit earlier if we get episode zero, who knows, but also our ongoing Bad Batch coverage as that season continues. So if you like Star Wars television, if you like our analysis, subscribe to the show right here on Bounty Hunt on your favorite podcast platforms. But that'll do it for this special bonus episode of Bounty Hunt. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're looking for other great podcasts about anything from Star Wars to nerd culture and sports, be sure to check out the rest of our lineup in the UTini Podcast Network. Be sure to also show some support and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you're a proud member of United on Patreon, thank you so much. An extra special thank you goes out to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, and Michael Fry, and Raymond Buzinski on our Jedi High Council, as well as our captains James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fleif, Chris Carrizo, and Sally and Chris Eilerson for all their amazing support. Head on over to Discord. We're continuing this conversation about the new show in SW, The Acolyte. And huge shout out to our editor, Kyle, for all his excellent work as always to get us into your feed so quickly, and Wes for the UTini Network support. A huge thank you as always to our listeners. That's it for us this week. May the Force be with you, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Bounty Hunt Podcast.
Yeah? Good.
To learn more about other UTini Patreon exclusives, visit UTini.com.